Welcome to Spark Your Fire Podcast, sparking your interest in Australian property and finance. Here's your hosts, Jazz and David.
G'day guys, welcome back to another episode of Spark Your Fire, sparking your fire in your Australian property finance. So today, I'm your host, David Shee, as always, and what we'd like to do today is we've got one of the recurring hosts that, recurring guests that came back last year. We received some popular feedback in terms of, he's sharing his knowledge on subdivision deals. So that's why we thought we'll get him back onto the show today and be able to provide some further updates on the project that he's worked on last year. Certainly be able to share a bit more lessons learned on what he's done so far and what the numbers look like, so that other people can actually learn something from it. So along with me today is our lovely co-host, Jazz. Jazz, how are you doing in Melbourne?
Honestly, David, I thought you forgot to introduce me for a second.
Mate, I will never forget you, put it that way. Despite the fact that you always irritate me to say that Melbourne is better than Sydney. But anyway, let's leave that discussion to the next, to another time. let's also introduce our guest today, which is Richard Hodges from Bellridge Property Group. Richard, how are you doing?
Yeah, good. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me back.
As always, it's been a pleasure. How's the how's things up there in Brisbane? I actually heard that it's heating up on the ground at the moment. So is that what you're seeing in terms of Brisbane
definitely.
Property market?
I'm seeing it personally myself, just with the blocks of land that we have for sale. I had an enormous amount of inquiry on the blocks that we have available. I've had two go under contract. One just before Christmas, literally 2 days before Christmas, another one in January. And plenty of inquiry. So it's definitely heating up here. And with my conversations with some of the agents as well, they're finding that things are picking up as well.
Whereabouts are those blocks?
They're in Scarborough, which is in the Moreton Bay Regional Council, on the bay. Okay.
Yep. Good to know Moreton Bay is heating up.
Richard, David loves Queensland. He's trying to pump up the Queensland property market because he's got a few properties up there.
I've only got one around Moreton Bay, though. That's the only thing. You should have bought a few more.
But for the listeners, I was just looking at the previous episodes. So we had Richard on episode number 28, July the 8th. You guys want to go back and listen to it. The last time when we had you on the show, we left it with one of the projects at the time that you were working on. You were working on a few, but the one that was still in the pipes, I think that project, which is a 3-lot subdivision in Scarborough, and that project is now complete, I guess?
Yes, yeah. It was actually complete just before we spoke last, but I did touch on it towards the end of our conversation. And it is an interesting one, and definitely love to talk about that.
So it was a development site that you were looking for down in the Bay Area, correct?
Yes, yes.
All right.
So this one was towards it was 2017. So it was April. We went under contract 2017. I actually did complete it in 2018. So it was completed a fair bit before. We spoke last, but it was the project that we touched on towards the end. And it took about 12 months, this particular project, and it included, it was already on 3 lots. And what we needed to do was realign the boundary and renovate the existing home. So I was able to, basically our end products was a renovated home and 2 vacant blocks of land.
So you said that it was already 3 separate titles, correct?
That's right. Or 3 separate lots on 1 title.
The subdivision was still required, plus the renovations work on the existing property, right?
Yeah, so an actual subdivision wasn't required. It's a boundary realignment. So there's 3 lots, but because 2 of the lots, or the house, you could say straddled 2 of the lots, and it was a corner block, so what we did was realign one of the boundaries to run behind the house. And create a new block on the side street, and that allowed us to keep that existing home.
Right, but did you end up getting separate titles for it at the end? Or not? So you did. Right.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and it did have to go through council. It's like a subdivision application, but it's what they call a realignment of boundary.
Sure. So give us, let's dig into that a little bit. So you bought that site in 2017, right?
Yes.
And what was the purchase price we're talking here?
$702,000
plus the stamp duty and other cost.
Yes.
Right. Yes. So, and I'm assuming it was subject to due diligence that you were going to figure out whether it can be the realignment can be done or not?
No. Interesting story about this one is I purchased it at auction. Mm-hmm. So there was no due diligence period. It was cash unconditional at auction. Now, the curveball was that I didn't have any money. Those that listened to my previous interview had known that I just left my job, was doing no money down deals. So I'd done my was in my first deal. This came along about 6 months after I'd left my employment. So I couldn't do any deals on my own, but I have to bring in partners to be able to help me fund those deals. But this particular one I noticed come up on realestate.com at a particular time, and it was a 4-week campaign period leading up to the auction. So that was pretty much my due diligence period. So I had to make sure that I had enough confidence in this deal during that period leading up to the auction that it was going to work.
Yep.
And then once I secured the property, I went about finding the funds to settle it.
So when in that 4-week period, when you say that was the time where you need to have enough confidence, I mean, what sort of things were you looking for in that 4-week period to make sure that the project is sustainable and it will make you enough profit at the end?
Yep. So first of all, getting confident in what the end sale values would be of the end product. So what I believe the blocks of land would sell for at the end of the project, as well as what the renovated house would sell for as well at the end of the project. And then work backwards from there, then work out the exact cost. So I had to talk to engineers, civil engineers, to work out exactly, or at least get a very good estimation on what the sewer and water connections were going to cost me. I had to and any other costs involved, all the costs associated with getting the approval. I had to be confident enough that we could get the approval to realign the boundary. But mm-hmm. in saying that, also knowing that I had a backup plan of being able to still make a profit if I demolished the house and just sold the three lots as they were, because that's the most that would have been the quickest and the most less risky of the options, because the three lots were already there. You don't actually need council approval to subdivide them. I only needed council approval to realign the boundary. So I had to make sure that there was enough money in, if the council didn't agree to the boundary realignment, that I could still demolish the house and sell three vacant lots and still turn a good profit. So the main things I had to look at is just to and then obviously come up with a purchase price that was going to be sufficient enough to, you know, take in account all the costs and also create a substantial profit, because going into this without any funds, I had to make sure that the deal was very, very attractive to investors, and that there was enough profit in there, I guess, to share around and be generous with the returns I was giving those investors.
Sure. So let's dig into the renovation part first. What kind of renovations the property was demanding? It was more structural renovations or cosmetic renovations, and roughly the cost associated?
Yeah. Well, at first, it was going to be mainly cosmetic, including new kitchen and just tidying up the bathroom, you might say. But then it actually turned out structural. The reason being is that it was a relatively small house, and there was a big wall with a huge fireplace in the lounge room that separated the lounge room from the kitchen. And it just made that space, both spaces, the kitchen and the lounge room, very small. And anyone that knows Queensland weather knows that a fireplace is more or less useless. So, and that was a brick wall, double brick wall. So we had to actually have that wall demolished. We needed a structural engineer to come out and, you know, give us advice on exactly what needed to be done to keep because it was a load-bearing wall, what needed to be done to make sure that the structural integrity of the house was going to remain. So in the end, we ended up knocking down that wall, and two large steel beams were installed in the roof. So it did become structural in the end.
Right.
But okay. But in saying that, that would have been the biggest value add for that particular for that renovation.
Yeah. So when you were looking at the numbers, did you have a minimum GP in mind that you will take the deal, gross profit, or?
Yeah. So because I was buying at auction, and as you know, once the hammer falls, you you pay your deposit, and you there's no basically there's no getting out without losing your deposit. So I had to make sure that there was a lot of profit in there, or a good substantial amount in there that, like I said before, is going to attract investors into the deal. So in this particular case, from memory, I think my minimum was 25% profit on costs going into this one.
Right. And that included the renovation cost and everything, obviously.
Yes, yes.
Yep. Right. So how long did the whole project take you to complete and sell the properties after that?
Yeah, so in the end, it took 12 months. So there were some delays that we had throughout the project, particularly with the renovation, but it was 12 months from settlement to settlement, more or less, of when we purchased the property to when it was sold, to when the final house was sold. So in saying that, the blocks of land were sold well before the house, but it did take 12 months. My forecast was 6 months on that, but I think I was underestimating the effort and the time it was going to take.
Right. And on the money side of things, how many investors did you had involved in this project, including yourself?
In the end, I had three. So I had three investors, all cash investors. So basically, what I did is had two initial investors that put in enough cash to cover the deposit, or when I say the deposit, the difference in the LVR and the purchase price and the costs, and then I borrowed the rest through a private lender, which was at 11.95%, being unable at that time to go to a bank and get residential finance. I had to go through a private lender to be able to close that deal. So the finance was very expensive, but the fact is that the good thing is that I had a lot of profit in the deal, which was able to absorb all those extra costs.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, and then I brought in an investor later on as well.
So first of all, so three investors, including yourself, or you plus three?
Me plus three. Yeah.
You plus three, right. Okay. Yeah. And what percentage of the money was from the bank or the private lender in this case?
We got a 65% loan-to-value ratio on that one.
Right.
So 65% from the private lender, and then the rest of it was cash, including so 65% of the purchase price. So we had to come up with cash for the costs as well as the remaining amount for the purchase as well.
Okay. So 65% at the interest rate of 11.5 at the time.
11.95%, yes. Exorbitant establishment fees as well. I think there was it was like $11,000 in establishment fees. It's roughly 2.5 to 3% of the value of the loan. Private lender.
Because there will be a risk fee, isn't it? So because that's like a risk fee associated. It's usually a percentage, yeah.
Yeah. And from memory, they took 3 months of interest payments up front as well.
Right. How did you go about the project? Did you start with the renovations first, or did you start with the council side first to get the boundary realigned in this case?
Yeah, definitely started with the council side first to get the boundaries realigned. Main reason is that the blocks of land, particularly one of them, because one of the blocks was not associated with the boundary realignment. So one of the three lots was remaining as is So all I had to do was register the new title for that lot that I could sell. So my initial and main priority was to get that lot ready and sold so that we can get some money in to pay down the loan, the 11.95% loan. So I was able to do that, I think from memory, within about 3 or 4 months, and that substantially reduced our debt on that property. So that was the beauty of that, was that there was at least one lot. There was one lot there that wasn't dependent on the council decision, which allowed us to move really quickly and get some money back in the door.
So yeah. That one is a straight realignment. You don't even need council approval to be able to proceed. Is that
correct? Yeah, so not a realignment. So that was, so if you just imagine three 10 by 40 metre lots in a row.
So it's a long one, long piece.
Yeah, all with 10 metre frontage, Mm-hmm. So one of the lots was standalone. All it had was a garage on it, basically, which we demolished. And then the other two lots had the existing house, which straddled the boundary of those two lots. And luckily we had a side street down the side. So what I was able to do is cut the back block off and retain the house. Therefore, I had one rectangular 10 by 20 meter lot and then two 20 by 20 meter lots, and one of those with the existing house on it. So the 10 by 40 meter lot was not associated with council or that boundary realignment, just the two lots that the house was on. And then that allowed us to, like I said, prepare that lot ready for sale without worrying what the council final decision was going to be. And the beauty of that one too is that the actual sewer and water connections that ran to the house actually came through that lot. So we were able to sell that lot with the existing connections that went to the house and then later on create new connections for the house and the new lot at the back. So, yeah, it worked out well in that regard. And as you can see, with 11.95% loan, you really want to get onto that as soon as possible. And, the configuration of this particular project allowed us to do that.
Yeah, that's interesting. So with that one, what was the cost? So you mentioned you just need to demolish the garage, and you were using existing sewage and all that water connection. So, is the garage demolition all that's required before you can sell off the lot? And how much was it?
So it was mainly the garage. I mean, obviously, what we did as far as the demolition was concerned, we had to demolish a garage. The rear lot, actually behind the house, there was a granny flat, a fibro granny flat, one bedroom granny flat, which we demolished as well, and a few trees on the property as well. So that was done first. And basically everything surrounding the house was demolished apart from the front yard of the house and the house. And then that block was more or less ready. Just got my solicitor to register the new title for that particular block, and it was ready to go. Yeah.
So a couple grand, I guess, as a cost, and how much profit? That one would probably be the most profitable out of all three, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Do you have a rough figure?
I don't have a separate. I haven't separated them in different.
Yeah. Okay.
Profit, but as far as you're right. Like as far as cost and effort go, as compared to what we got for it, it was definitely the most profitable part of the project.
Yeah, very nice. Okay.
Did you started marketing these blocks and the house itself before the works were complete, or did you wait for the works to be complete and the council permits to arrive before you can actually start marketing the blocks for sale?
I marketed the first block, the 10 by 40 meter block that wasn't part of the subdivision. I marketed that fairly early because our intention was to sell that as soon as possible, and because the fact that it was ready to go and we could settle fairly quickly, I did. Not long after we got the approval from council to realign the boundaries, I started marketing the second block. I always market, no matter, even if I'm doing a subdivision and we don't have titles yet, I always market the blocks as early as possible, or as soon as I clear them and have an approval from council, I usually market the blocks and sell them subject to getting the titles registered. Yep. So it's more or less like an off the plan type contract. So yeah, first one was marketed early, about 4 to 5 weeks after the first one started getting marketed, I started marketing the second one. But the house wasn't marketed until the end of the renovation. But in saying that too, there was a slight change. There was an intention to change the strategy with the house. While I was getting the blocks prepared and going through all that, I decided to give the house to an agent that I knew in the local area to try and sell off market as is, to save us having to renovate. I don't see myself as a renovator. I don't really, to be honest, and particularly after this renovation, which I'm happy to talk about, I try to avoid them at all costs now, because it was a tough reno. But at first I tried selling it without renovating, just to shorten the time frame of the actual project, as well as not have to go through the hassle of renovating. But at the end, we couldn't get the price that we wanted, so we ended up renovating anyway.
So I'm assuming you didn't have much challenges selling the blocks?
At first, I mean, they were on the first one was on the market for roughly 6 weeks first, and I was getting a few nibbles, but I wasn't getting anything concrete. So I was getting a little bit concerned at that stage, and then just out of nowhere, I got two offers. So it went into multiple offer, and I was able to secure one of those contracts. So the first one took about 6 weeks. The second one took only maybe 3 weeks after I started advertising it. The good thing about the second one, it was very unique in the fact that it was a square block rather than a rectangular 10x40 lot. So the point of difference is that it had the wider frontage as well as being on the side street, which was basically a dead end, quiet street. So that had a point of difference, and I think that's why that one didn't last as long as it did. And that also did go into multiple offer situation as well. So it's always good when you got a multiple offer, because makes your negotiation process a lot easier and gives you the upper hand.
Right. From the seller perspective, everyone loves that. From buyer's perspective, it's a bit of a nightmare.
Exactly. And I've been on both sides.
At any given time, on average, how many projects have you got on the go in the subdivision?
Usually, at the most I've had is two. However, I've got two. I've got one I'm finishing up at the moment, which the last block of that one settles this month. I've got another one at the moment, which is I've sold one block and still, which settles this month as well. And I'm just waiting to get the other one sold. I've got another one under contract at the moment, which I'm working through and doing all my due diligence and putting my joint venture agreement and what have you together with the joint venture there. But I'm looking to ramp it up. So I've basically only ever had about two going at one time, but I'm looking at increasing that to a fair bit more. Yep.
Involving the other people, which is basically the investors in this case, did you find much challenges in that space, or it was pretty easy to get the investors on board with this particular project and otherwise in general?
With that project, yeah. So I started talking to investors leading up to the auction, just to initially I was trying to lock someone down before the auction, to be honest, so that I could go into the auction and be confident in the fact that I've, got the money to pay for this particular property. But that didn't happen. So I had to go in and purchase it anyway at a price that I thought was more or less a fire sale price. But I did have one particular investor lined up who was fairly interested. He's actually a good friend of mine in Sydney, who I grew up with, and he's a property investor himself. He's actually a mortgage broker as well. So he was definitely showed a lot of interest. And once I had it under contract, he jumped on board. We got his brother on board as well. And that was there. They were the initial investors. And then I down the track, I got another investor involved as well, who I'd met through some network meetings up here in Queensland, property network meetings. So yeah, put it this way, I did lose a lot of sleep in leading up to settlement. Luckily, what I did prior to the auction is pre-negotiate a longer settlement period. So, as you know, usual settlement period for an auction is 30 days. So I pre-negotiated a 60-day settlement because I knew I needed as much time as possible to get the deal together. And then, you know, once I purchased it, I got on the phones and just started getting the money together. I didn't have the idea of the private lender until about a week or two after the auction. What I was trying to do was to get a joint venture partner that could fund the whole deal with their own financing as well. But I couldn't go down that track, so I ended up financing it myself through that private lender. That took a little bit longer than expected. So I pretty much had the valuation done about 2 weeks before settlement, and I was signing the loan documents just under a week before settlement. So it was very touch and go.
I quickly want to touch on the private lender space as well. What was your experience like with the private lender? Did you find much difficulties dealing with them, or it was pretty smooth sailing?
No, I found it pretty good, obviously apart from the costs, but dealing with them and going through the loan process, there's a lot less evidence that they need. They look at the project itself mainly and the feasibility of the project. They don't look at your cash flow. They do look at assets, so they want to know your asset position and make sure that you've got the cash there ready to make the purchase. But it was very, very compared to a bank and your normal residential loan. There was a lot less requirements needed, basically. And then throughout the process of the actual project, they were more or less like a joint venture partner. All I needed to do was just update them every month or two with some photos, just to show them that the project was on track. When I needed certain things from them, like their consent, for example, to register the titles and what have you, that happened fairly quickly. So it was fairly easy to deal with, this particular lender.
Right. And what was your backup plan in case if you were not able to find the investors after the purchase at the auction? I'm sure you would have thought of a backup plan. What are you going to end up doing? Because now that you technically own the property, but you don't have funds.
To be honest, Jazz, I really did not. I had to ensure I did not entertain the idea that it wasn't going to happen. otherwise, if I let that idea creep in that, look, I can't settle this, then that's what would have happened. I had to be, 100% certain in my own mind that I was going to get this deal together no matter what.
True entrepreneur who likes to take a risk.
Yeah, you're almost got to be like the Conor McGregor of property. You know, you've got to be so certain that you're going to get this deal together, because if you start entertaining not getting it together, then, you drive yourself crazy and you'd probably – for want of a better word, manifest that reality.
Hats off to pulling it through. I mean, that requires some serious guts to be able to. Yeah, especially when you are fairly new in the game.
I was, and you know what? Like, I look back on it now because I've been doing this a few years, and I do sometimes look back and say, "Look, gee, that was stupid. It was a fairly silly move." Although, in saying that, I did mitigate a lot of the risk by, being an area expert in the area. I was very confident on what I could sell the blocks for. As a matter of fact, I sold them for way more than what I originally had in my feasibility. Secondly, I knew that, like I said, I set a a price going into the auction that I knew that if I did get it at that price, that it was so cheap that I that there was heaps of margin in there to be generous, like I said, with investors to get them on board. Like, just to give you an example, I had agents ringing me that afternoon once the word had got around, telling me that I should be in jail because I stole that property. So I bought it at such a price that, it was, and it has, you know, I still get it to this day when I talk to agents and they know that I was the one that purchased that. They all know, gee, you got that for a steal, that type of thing.
Yeah. So if you were to quantify it, what, how much under the market price did you end up fetching it for? I mean, what you paid $702,000. So, what do you think was the reasonable price for it?
I think if it was marketed properly, because I think the agents didn't market it as well as they could have. Being Hopefully an ex-agent myself. To it. No, oh. Well, yeah. Anyway, we'll see. But there were some things through that campaign which I think they could have done a lot better to, and also through the auction. The auction came to a bit of a stalemate where I was the highest bidder and they were negotiating between me and the vendors. The vendors were standing across the road. I was standing on the other side of the road and they were going back and forward. I feel that, I think they worked on the vendors a little bit more than they worked on me to get me up. But in saying that, I think that the property would have sold for at least 150 more than what I'd purchased it for if done properly and even if they took it to private treaty and accepted. I knew that if I'd let it pass in, then there was a lot of people there waiting with conditional contracts and conditional offers that were going to pay a lot more than what I was willing to pay with conditions. So I knew that if I was going to have my best chance, I had to take it at auction.
So you probably roughly got it 30% under the market value.
I think so, yeah. And I've had other agents back me up on that and tell me that that's what they think they should have sold it for. I've even had neighbours tell me that they were really unhappy with what it sold for because it devalued their properties and that type of thing as well.
Yeah. I'm never going to be in the area where you're doing business, man.
was that a public trustee sale? Because I don't think Brisbane does takes the property up to auction market. So what's the rationale behind that one?
No, I mean, a lot of agents do auctions up here. It's not as prominent as Melbourne and Sydney, but there are, you know, we do have a fair share of auctions here. But the situation there was that it was a family that owned it for a very long time.
Right.
And one of them was the father, I guess, was towards the end of his life, and they wanted to sell it before that happened, and so there was a lot of there was motivation there definitely to sell it. And I think the fact that they had a cash unconditional auction offer, and they went with that even though they had to take a hit on the price.
Yeah, right. Wow. Okay. Yeah, because I was going to say $702K for a free 1-3 lot. That's such a, I mean, and for Scarborough, Scarborough is a premium suburb around the Moreton Bay, just on that. Mm.
Just to give you an idea, I think it was maybe 2 or 3 months before that, a two-lot property, which had a house straddling both lots, where the purchaser of that actually had to demolish that house. And what he did, he built two houses on each lot, but he bought that for $800,000, and that was only on two lots. And like I said, he was left with two vacant blocks of land. I bought mine for $700,000, was left with two vacant blocks of land and a house.
No wonder the agent said it's a daylight robbery, mate. But well secured.
I mean, the thing is though, and what I'm finding is that, and this is what I've been taught by mentors, is that we're looking for buyers that are motivated, sellers that are motivated to sell. You know, price is not always the most, the biggest motivation for a seller. It's not always the biggest motivation. Sometimes they have other things going on where they need a quick sale they don't want to put on the market for any particular. Like, I find ones where I buy, off market where the actual seller doesn't want to put it on the market for one reason or another, and that's why they're dealing with me, and that type of thing. So you're always just looking for those other motivations that the seller may have that would help you, you know, satisfy those motivations, but at the same time allow you to get a better price on the property.
Yeah, finding out the why, you know, what's exactly. what's gonna tick the seller, right? So
yes. Yep.
No, it's good. I think, I think that's a fantastic deal. But I guess one thing that's missing is numbers. We actually like to know what profit did you made out of it. So you said, you mentioned, we talked about the cost. So 702 plus stamps, plus obviously exorbitant ongoing repayment for with the private lender.
Yeah.
So what was the, based on your numbers, what was the total cost in the end for this project?
Don't remember the exact cost. I remember the profit, obviously.
that's an important one.
I can work backwards from there, but total cost, look, to give you an idea, the renovation itself blew right out. If I was doing a reno on its own, I would have we would have done our butts, basically. The renovation blew out. There's a lot of issues with the renovation. It was a very old house. The good thing is what saved us was the fact that the land sold really, really well and sold for way above expectations. In saying that, though, I made sure my expectations were very low going into it because obviously buying at auction, I needed to know that I went in with numbers of what I could sell the land for at a fire sale price, and anything above that was obviously a bonus. So the good thing about this is that the land was what made this particular deal. In hindsight, I should have persevered with trying to sell it unrenovated because at the end of the day, if you isolate the renovation, you didn't really make any money out of that. And it stretched the timeline out a fair bit as well. So if I had to do this deal again, I would probably not renovate, to be honest. And in saying that, I would have probably demolished everything and just sold the three lots as they were and not realign the boundary. But in saying that, it, like I said, it still made very good money and there was a lot of lessons learned, which was good. So to answer your question, it took 12 months. We made $250,000 in profit. I can't remember what the costs were. The costs were up around the around the 250 mark from memory.
Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah, so 250, so around 250K profit or up at the end. Yeah. And that was split between four of you. Is that correct?
Three of us. So me and basically what happened was the original investors got a percentage share of the profit.
Yep.
So they got a percentage based on what their contribution was.
Yep.
So at the end of the day, I got, to be exact, 73.5% of the profit. They got the remaining amount. Then the other investor that came in later on, I just needed a relatively small loan from him. I paid him, I think it was 20% per annum. On that, and that came out of my share. So I think I paid him roughly. He put about $100,000 in. I gave him a minimum 6 months of interest. So basically, paid 10% on that. So 20% per annum, but 10% on the actual, because it was 6 months loan. 10% on his money. So he got about $10,000 out of that.
Yeah, right.
In 6 months, so he got 20% on his money. Yeah, so that's how the end funds worked out. So the beauty of this particular deal was the fact, because I was technically the financing partner, I'm the one that went and got the private loan. That was all basically on me. That allowed me to keep the majority of the profits. So, being the financing partner as well as the time and skill, the project manager as such, allowed me to keep a good substantial amount of the profit.
That's good. That's a good, 72% of, say, 250K. That's a good 180, roughly, profit. So, yeah. But
and when you consider I didn't put any money down whatsoever, apart from obviously financing the loan or servicing the loan, which when I say servicing the loan, all the repayments actually came out of the cash that went into the deal. So there was no money down for me, and was able to make a good amount out of it. But it, to be honest with you, it wasn't without its stresses. So it was well earned.
Lots of grey hairs and I'm sure, you know, lots of sleepless nights as you admitted before. So kudos. Well done.
Yeah. Moving away from the property, switching gears.
Aliens, believers or not.
Aliens, believe it or not. How can I forget that?
Yeah, I do. We have to be naive to think we're the only ones in this whole galaxy.
Oh, so you're on my side as well. David doesn't believe in it. So yeah, I got another vote. Yes.
Oh, we lost count. Don't worry.
Someone had to build a pyramid, as they say.
True. How about self-driving cars? Will be commercialized in the next 5 years completely?
Oh, definitely in the next 5 to 10 years. I reckon, and I was listening to a podcast on this about a year or two ago from a futurist, and I found it very interesting. And he was saying that, like, there's not long from now, maybe 10 years, we're not even going to have garages because we're not even going to have our own cars unless it's a hobby. It'd be like the horse and cart. They'll all be self-driving and they'll all be, controlled by companies like Uber and that type of thing where you don't actually own your car. You summons it through your phone or whatever other devices we might have at that stage. And they turn up and you use them that way. So cars will become, according to this guy anyway, cars will become more of a hobby than anything else. And it will get to a stage where they'll only be self-driving cars on the road and no...
I totally agree with it, except the garage part. I love garage, mate. I'm not going to let that disappear.
Yeah, that's, but the thing is, I'll say that there's no need to have one, unless it's a storage room or something, but there'll be no need to have one because nobody will need cars as such for commuting. Yeah. Those that would have cars would be those that are enthusiasts that would probably take it down to a racetrack or something like that to drive. It's like I said, it would be like the horse, back in the day when cars came about. Yeah.
No, completely agree. And crypto, here to stay or a fad?
I can't comment. I don't know anything about it, to be honest. I've never really looked into it. Yeah, so I don't want to comment on something I don't have any idea about.
No, fair enough. It's just another question. maybe time to look into it.
I've learned something about myself over the last few years is that if I don't focus on one thing, I don't achieve anything. So I've had to put blinkers on the last few years and just focus on what I'm actually doing with development. And any shiny objects I've had to just have the discipline to just disregard because it was just going to take me off course. Yeah. And crypto has come across my radar a few times, obviously, and I've just had to just disregard it altogether and stay focused on what I'm doing.
When you say it has come on your radar, what do you mean by that?
There was a lot of publicity around it at one stage. I've had people talk to me about it at different network meetings. Yep. And that type of thing. I had a friend who made and then lost a lot of money as well, so I heard his story. But as far as dabbling into it myself and learning more about it, I haven't spent the time to do that.
Okay, fair enough.
There you go. Richard's like me, mate.
Yeah, except the space part. Like, really good, Richard. Awesome to hear the story about the development. I think that gives us some great insight into the development projects of some of the challenges that are involved. I have to say, you had some serious guts, like I said before, of buying it on the auction without having any funds ready, which is a true entrepreneur.
Conor McGregor of property development.
That's the title of this one. That's it.
I didn't even have the deposit. I had to ring up my mate, my friend who I was talking to that ended up becoming an investor. And I actually rang him up on auction day and said, look, do you mind? Because I negotiated a smaller deposit of 5% rather than 10%. And I had to ring him and say, look, I've ended up purchasing this property. Do you mind swinging me, 35,000? For me to secure, and having the history that we do, he was happy to do that. So Yeah, it was a true no money down deal, definitely.
Now, awesome. I'm sure you're working on heaps of other projects, which at some point in the future we'll discuss. We'll bring you back to share some of your more advanced developments that you're doing these days. But in the meantime, for the listeners, hope you guys are enjoying the content. And if you are, please don't forget to give us a 5-star rating on whatever app you're using and let the word spread like a fire. Spark your fire. Cheers, cheers, and name it. Bye.
Bye. If you have any questions or feedback about today's episode, you can reach out to us through sparkyourfirepodcast@gmail.com. That's sparkyourfirepodcast, all one word, @gmail.com. Also, the content discussed in this episode is general in nature. Please seek specific advice from qualified professionals in regards to your personal situation.